literature that's old. This is from Israel. This is, I'm sure, only gotten bigger. That the rate of single motherhood by choice in Israel, this is, you know, the turn of this century, more than doubled in the 20 to 29 age range, tripled in 30 to 39, and nearly quadrupled among never married women 40 and over. Now, I don't know. That's from a 2003 publication in Israel. I would guess impressionistically that it's not getting lower. It's probably getting higher. Would that be correct? Okay. So it's and in the U.S., my guess is it's becoming elite, you know, a similar number. Where suddenly modern Orthodox communities are faced with a growing number of women who will move into a community like Teaneck or Great Neck or Woodmere or different modern Orthodox communities, certainly in the New York City suburbs, and they'll have a child that they had without a father. Okay. So the psychosocial research bottom line is we don't know. We don't know what the impact of this is. The early research is pretty clear. These people are no more likely to report stress associated with parenting. By the way, they tend to be relatively wealthy when they do this. They very much want the child, and they often don't bring a child into the world without the proper kind of support. So it's a child who's very, very loved, typically. Nobody knows what happens, though, when they hit adolescence. We just learned about what happens with IVF when you hit adolescence, that they're fine, but in certain cases not. And we don't really have the answer yet. But in terms of the early studies, they have just as much enjoyment of motherhood, but there's some negatives. They might be a little overwhelmed. Lower levels of mother-infant interaction, lower levels of sensitive responding. And obviously, what it says here is the jury's still out. We just don't know. So some post-skim I know, and I won't even mention it, because this is truly, I have no right to mention it. From what I understand, halachically, from what I've heard, is there may be very little in the way of problems with this. But other post-skim say, in the world say that, well, how can you bring an orphan into the world? So the difficulties are mostly hashkafic, not halachic. Is it Amoritz? That's right. I'm not bad for an Amoritz? Okay. So, I mean, that sounds like, what is it, like humble bragging. But it's, I mean, I really don't know this stuff. So, we don't know the long-term impact, but it's promising so far. And my guess is, even with some single, I've seen some adolescents who were the children of single mothers by choice, and sometimes they'll have problems. And I have a kid who teaches in a school where she has in her class a number of children of gay couples, which is a whole other talk that I have attached to this that I didn't post because I know we don't have time for it now. But the reality is that that daughter tells me that she sees some issues in these kids different than in others for obvious reasons, you know. But the bottom line is, I've never met a single child of a single mother by choice who, if you would ask him or her, would you rather not have been born? Obviously, okay? It would be such a ridiculous question to any of them. And they are, for the most part, happy, and for the most part, loved, and for the most part, surrounded by a tremendous amount of support and resources. So it gets complicated. But the bottom line is, it's a new challenge. Let me end. I'll end with a story. I have to end with a positive story. So it'll be the story of, so anyway, I just raised questions here, but let me summarize what we said until now. So in terms of the issues, the bottom line is it's all brand new stuff. But what's beginning to come out on the children, I didn't talk about the psychological process of the parents, which is a whole other talk, but the children who were conceived by IVF and more recent, you know, in that way, there's no evidence of anything other than positive outcomes in those children. That's clear. But the other thing that's equally important to know is there is this risk category that we talked about with donor, you know, sons of donor insemination fathers, and that's for obvious reasons. You need to know about it. But the bottom line is, openness is the key. Disclosure is the key. Let kids know. You don't want to have, if Eric Erickson had been told right from the beginning who his real father was, we never would have heard of him, frankly. But and we wouldn't even have the concept of identity crisis. But that's a whole other talk. Okay. Let me end with, since this is the end of my involvement and the conference is coming to an end, first of all, I want to end by just thanking everybody. It's been an amazing experience. And I'll echo what everybody said. I was telling my wife that I have never, and I do a lot of speaking, a lot, way too much. It's like an addiction, okay? So I've never spoken to such a high quality group of men and women in my career. And I'm not just, and I never say this, not for the last two conferences. No, I've never said this before. And it's just like the quality of people, both in terms of midos, in terms of brilliance, and in terms of me knowing that there isn't anybody in this room who can get up here and give this talk better than I did, okay? It's just an amazing, amazing group. It really is, very rare, and yasher koach to everybody, to you and to you, to everybody, okay? So thank you for that. And I'll just end, and I'll just end with a final story, okay? I'm not sure it's the best one I could end with, but it's going back to the ingredients of resilience. So I'll go back to that. And the ingredients of resilience being a combination of optimism and hope and meaning and how you transmit it. Very often, my guess is that the role that you play with your patients or your clients or with your community, very often when you transmit this, it's invisible and you don't know it. So I'm going to end with the story of something that, an experience I had in Sri Lanka, okay? And it goes like this. There was a tsunami in Sri Lanka going back, what was it, 2004, something like that? 2004. It was, unfortunately, hundreds of thousands of people were killed in that part of the world. And my main secular area is post-traumatic stress disorder, and sometimes I get asked to go to these places. Afterwards to be involved in the psychological recovery. So I was invited to go with a couple of colleagues. It was actually a joint effort with the Israeli government and the American government to train 40 physicians, train the trainer model, to help them help the country deal with this. It was right after the tsunami. The devastation was unbelievable. And I had incredible experiences in the couple of weeks I was there, but I'm going to end with the following story. One of the doctors who lives in the southern tip of the country told me the following story, and with this I'll end. He's standing on a mountain. He lives, his house is built a little bit towards the top of a mountain in the southern tip of the country, which is where the tsunami came first. And by some miracle on that morning, he went out for some fresh air. And he's stretching his arms, stretching his legs a little bit. And he sees the tsunami coming. He said, it's like, you can't even imagine. He says, it's like seeing waves the size of the Empire State Building, the size of the tallest buildings in the world coming at you. To him, it felt like in slow motion. That point, you don't think. You're beyond thought. He runs, he goes into fight or flight, runs into his house, throws his three-year-old daughter on his shoulders, picks up his mother with one hand, picks up his wife with the other, the three people living in his house with him. Thank God there weren't really tough ethical choices to make. And he runs to the top of the hill. Just high in the top of the mountain, just high enough to escape. Now, he's the doctor for this town. He's the town doctor, and he grew up in this town. And he's now in a state of total yish, total despair, and total frozen. He's frozen. He's looking down on what used to be the town of his childhood, and it's gone. It's totally gone. And he's just He says, okay, at least I saved my immediate family. Then he says, totally involuntarily, what runs through his head, he says he has no idea why, was something that his third grade teacher had told him about 20 years earlier. He was struggling with the math problem in that town. She goes over to him, puts his arm around his shoulder, and she says, you know, if something's difficult, you have to do it. If something's impossible, you have to try a little harder. And somehow, with her voice resounding in his head, he runs down the mountain and saves nine lives, nine more lives. People alive today because of the ghost of a voice shared by a teacher a generation earlier. Right, we've been talking about the theme of Ma'at min ha'or doch harbe min ha'choshech. Do you think for one second today, if she's around, she would know that a little word of encouragement to a third grade boy on a math problem is responsible for nine more people walking the face of the earth today? It's amazing. You never know. You never know. And in terms of your sense of recharging your batteries at a conference like this, you're all living lives of chesed. You're living lives of planting seeds. So if I could leave with a bracha and a charge, it's the hope and the optimism and the incredible gift that you all have of being able to live a life of chesed, optimism, and hope. Thank you.